Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. My name is Corey Fleck and I'm your host for this weekend show, also your host throughout the week on our website and podcast, kereport.com. It was another busy week of number of company updates and a bunch of company introductions. Please keep the emails coming. I love hearing from all of you regarding the companies that I'm bringing on and any thoughts on companies that you think we should have on. Sometimes it does take a little bit of time to get those companies on, but I do appreciate and love reading over all the emails that I am receiving. Let's get into this weekend shows. I am kicking the show off with Adrian Day, president of Adrian Day Asset Management, also manages the Euro-Pacific Gold Fund. Adrian, this week was all about central bank meetings and, of course, a lot of eyes on the Fed. And what we saw again, especially in the statement out of the Fed after their meeting, was pretty much identical to the last couple meetings. Jerome Powell has reiterated really over the past 6 months just how much the Fed is trying to stay on the sidelines. Now, I know that's hard to say as they are injecting still a lot of capital into the market, somewhere around $120 billion a month, but they're not making any changes to their policy. What was your takeaway from the statement this week out of the Fed?
Yeah, and good to speak with you, Corey. Thank you for asking me. I wouldn't use the expression of stay on the sidelines. As you said, they're injecting a lot of money into the economy, but I know what you mean. They're not trying to change their fundamental stance at the moment in one way or the other. My takeaway is that the Fed doesn't like bond yields going up. They don't like interest rates moving up at the moment because that interferes with their carefully thought out, carefully conceived plans for the economy. And we've seen other central banks around the world, Australia, Europe, European Central Bank most notably, taking action to try and stop rates going up. Now, the Fed, particularly at this point, where the Fed is trying not to make a fundamental change towards more dovishness or more hawkishness, as you indicated, I think the Fed would rather talk rates down than actually do anything. So they made it clear that they were going to stay on course, $120 billion a month or whatever it is, but interest rates probably wouldn't rise until 2023. Et cetera, et cetera. So they're trying to tell the market and bond investors in particular, there's no need to, push yields up. But if the jaw fails, I have no doubt that they will, go for action, something like a twist as we had in 2011. But at the moment, they're trying to achieve it by talk, which is what we're seeing today. But to me, I'm not sure that'll work because the bond vigilantes have been asleep or dormant for a long time, and they've finally woken up. You know, the 10-year yield, as you know, has gone from whatever it was, 0.6 to 1.65 or something over the course of the last 6 weeks or so. That's a huge jump, right? And that's what all the headlines in the financial press are about. That's what the Fed, has been focused on. But let's face it, 1.65 is still not a lot for the 10-year bond. And I think we need to put that in context. Number one, short-term rates are still very low, and in many cases, have actually declined. And secondly, even a 1.65, the 10-year bond is still negative real rates, if you look at the latest inflation number, right? And so the bond vigilantes are saying 1.65 is still not enough for the 10-year. And we saw that the recent auctions were pretty mediocre. The 3-year and the 10-year were pretty mediocre. So I'm not sure that the long answer. I'm not sure, but the talk is going to work. What's interesting, if you look at, you know, the dollar collapsed after the Fed. That's what it should have done. Gold was up, or is up as we're speaking, which it should have been. Stocks were up. Again, inject excess liquidity into the system. It has to go somewhere and support stocks. The interesting thing is that the bonds were up. I mean, and the yields were down, but only marginally. Now, as we're talking right now, bonds, the 10-year is still up, which is sort of surprising. And I think, again, remember, the bonds are up, meaning the yield is down. I think that's going to turn around tomorrow. I think that's going to turn around certainly before gold or stocks turn around. So that's my take.
Okay. So as I think everyone can decipher, we are chatting shortly after the Fed statement. But Adrian, you're right. All eyes have been on the yield, or the bond market, with yields rising and the 10-year. A lot of the gloom and doomers are saying the market, the economy, can't withstand higher yields, even at some of these generally higher levels. The market is telling us that they can, and that the economy can, or at least traders are telling us this. Do you share any of those gloom and doom outlooks that as yields rise, that's eventually just going to lead to this massive collapse?
Well, I wouldn't use the word massive collapse, but, you know, the yield going from 0.6 to 1.6 is obviously a huge move. But 1.6 is still extraordinarily low. I think the economy, especially given the increase of the improvements that we've seen and then the improvements that we're expecting, can certainly withstand 1.6. I mean, if you can lock in for 10 years, something under 2%, and even a 30-year mortgage is 3.26, which is, again, up significantly this year, but that's still a pretty darn good rate to be able to lock in. I think the economy can withstand that. But if we got rates start moving to, you know, the 10-year to 2.5, 3, then it starts to be a different question. And everything, you know, everything's on a continuum. I don't think there's a magic number, you know, where the economy collapses. But at 2.5 or 3, some businesses will find it more difficult, you know, and at 3.5 or 4, a lot more will find it more difficult. And of course, it's not just businesses. It's also consumers as credit card debts go up. It's also, you know, the government with the interest payments on the debt. So all of these things would be hurt if rates continue to move up.
Adrian, what about the way money has flowed, especially this year, even for most of last year? Money has moved into U.S. equity markets, and we have seen a very quick recovery, really, ever since that March washout COVID low that we had last year. Investors right now seem encouraged on an economic restart in the U.S., or at least encouraged enough to put money into the U.S. equity markets. One of the reasons why we've seen bonds continue to fall and gold, kind of these safer assets, are just not in favor. What do you take away from this environment that we've been in now, closing in on a year?
Yeah, well, if the economy isn't, I mean, obviously after March, you had a different sort of situation. You had excessive lows and excessive sell-off. So you were rebounding from lows and you had excess liquidity, which had to flow somewhere. In the last, you know, few months since the vaccines and since optimism on the economy opening up, it makes sense that you would look at stocks as opposed to bonds or gold, right? I mean, if you think the economy is going to do very well, stocks would certainly come above bonds and even come above gold. Other things being equal, they're not equal, of course. So it's logical that stocks, you know, everybody, I know everybody, and especially our friends, everybody's talking about, you know, stocks are so overvalued and, you know, it can't go on like this and so on and so on. But as long as the Fed continues to pump excess liquidity into the market, the place where most of that money is going to go is stocks. So I don't want to sound like a Pollyanna. As the market goes up, above the reality, above corporate earnings increase and so on, as the valuation, another way of saying it, as the valuations get higher, there's clearly more risk in the market. So that if something happens, the downside is, even if it's only a short-term downside, is a lot greater than when valuations are extraordinarily low. I agree with that completely. The risk is getting higher. And I don't want anybody to think that we're putting 100% of our money to work in the stock market. But having said that, you know, on a toing cost, I think the market is more likely to go up over the next 3-6 months than it is to go down over the next 6 months, so long as the Fed continues to create excess liquidity.
All right, Adrian, let's move into the gold space, into some of the stocks or sectors of stocks that you follow quite closely. Those are royalty companies, some of the larger producers as well. Those, curiously enough, have been sold off along with all the juniors and along with some of the lower quality juniors as well. It's quite shocking to see, I think, just how much the royalty companies and majors have sold off during this last like 7 month period. However, there is a little bit of a light right now just this month. You look at something like Newmont. Newmont's up 15% this month as we are recording. What's your thought on the potential value is still available in some of these majors or royalty companies and hopefully their ability to bounce back, maybe bring in some more of that generalist money?
Yeah, good question. A lot of thoughts. One thought I would say is that as of the beginning of August, you know, at the peak, the royalties, the major royalties were excessively overvalued. You know, Franco-Nevada was at its highest valuations ever. That's the first thing to say. They were expensive. Second thing I'll say is that stocks like Franco and Royal, let's say, on the royalty side, stocks like Barrick and Newmont on the mining side, are much more were broadly owned by generalists. And when the market turns, a generalist is much more likely to get rid of something he doesn't know, doesn't understand, you know, bought as a hedge, bought only recently, etc. So, I mean, just to give an analogy, if I had finally decided to buy Tesla, which is not going to happen, and the market turned, I can tell you the first stock I would get rid of is Tesla. And it's the same thing with the generalists. They got rid of the things, the gold stocks that they didn't really follow. And that's why things like Franco, Barrick, Newmont were hurt more than one might have expected. But of course, when the generalists return, those are the first things that they're going to buy. And lastly, I'll say this, that the big royalties, you look at Franco, for example, you know, investors in Franco-Nevada, you know, have been a bit shell-shocked by the decline in Franco-Nevada over 6 months. It's not what we're used to over 9 months. It's not the kind of decline we're used to. But Franco has gone down less than Barrick and other mining companies. So it's still relatively defensive. You know, it's still showing that in down market, it's relatively defensive.
So, Adrian, combining your outlook for U.S. equity markets with obviously the Fed remaining easy and markets potentially continuing to move higher, does that mean that generalists are going to continue to ignore the gold sector and these majors and royalty companies?
No, I don't think so. I mean, generalists, you know, they tend to get on board later. So, as you said, you know, we've had a good move in some of these stocks. You mentioned Newmont, but we could say the same for the XAU broadly of Franco, Barrick, and so on. They've had a good move since, you know, the middle end of February. I think we need gold to move up on a sustained basis. It doesn't have to go to 1900 necessarily, but, you know, for a matter of you know, 4, 6, 8 weeks, we want to see gold move pretty much consistently up, you know, two steps up at least for one step back. And then the generalists will start to notice, I think. You know, we get over 1800, people start watching, we get to 1850, and I think people start to investigate. That's the way I'm looking at it. And that might be 3 months at the most.
Okay. So you do see a rebound coming. Do you see this rebound being strong? Is it going to be a shoot back to maybe testing out some of those recent higher levels, or is it going to be more of a grind to bring some of these generalists back in?
I suspect that the next sort of, well, I think in the near term, meaning the next week or two or three, we could have a little bit of a sharp rebound, depending on what happens with bond yields and depending on what happens with the Fed. If the Fed's talk today is enough for the bond market for yields to come down again, I think we'll get a sort of catapult event effect, a ratchet effect in gold. Because at the moment, gold is held by pretty strong hands. I mean, I think all the weekends have sold. The sentiment up until, you know, today, the sentiment has been negative. You know, we're just, that's the right framework for a catapult event. But, you know, if we get to 1800, then I think it's a much slower grind, to be honest. Because let's face it, we've been at that 1950 level three times this year. And each time it's failed, and failed quite sharply, right? And quite quickly. So I think, you know, people only have to look at a one-year chart to say, you know what, I'm going to be a little bit careful when it gets to 1900. So I think it's going to be a little bit, I hope. So it's going to be a ratchet immediately. And then once we get to 1800, this is my thinking, it'll be a little bit of a more slow-paced advance. But the fundamental thing that I keep coming back to, you and I talk about it, but my fundamental feeling is the Fed and other central banks around the world are excessively easy today, excessively easy. We can talk about what happened today or last week or this month, but let's not forget that in a historical basis, on a historical basis, we are excessively easy. They are creating massive amounts of excess liquidity, and nothing suggests that they are going to change that anytime soon. And that's all very bullish for gold.
Is there any chance that the Fed or any of these other larger central banks do change policy, though? Maybe start to tighten, or at least test the market to see if they can tighten?
You know, to me, there's no indication at the moment. You look at Japan, where the Bank of Japan chairman has basically said, our policy for the last 30 years has failed, but we're going to keep on doing it because we don't really know what else to do. You look at Europe, Lagarde does not want to ease more. She wants to begin to normalize. So what they decided to do was, instead of increasing the amount of QE, they said they'd bring it forward. So we'll bring it all forward to suppress bond yields. But let's just wait and see if, you know, on the back end of that, they actually reduce what they had planned or in fact, as I suspect, yes, they'll bring some forward and then they'll just keep on going at the new rate for a while. There's and Jerome Powell, I mean, couldn't be more clear on his views on tightening. I mean, they're talking about not raising interest rates till 2023 now. 2023. So that's two full years from now is when they're talking about the potential for raising rates. When asked on his last conference or in December about reducing the balance sheet, we're not even thinking about. I mean, you can't be any clearer than that. Something will change, Corey, of course. Something will change. We know that. I suspect we'll see at some point, it may not even be this year, but at some point we'll see inflation accelerate faster than they're expecting, and the market will demand a change.
Okay, yeah, and that's the big turn then. So I guess something to keep an eye on. Again, it does come down a lot to central bank policy or any change in central bank policy, especially for the gold market. But right now we do need to just be aware and understand that the continued rise in U.S. equity markets is distracting a lot of investors, and rightfully so. It's been a better investment over the last 7 months. Adrian, it's great chatting with you. Always great having you on the show. And it's always fun following up on some of the majors and royalty companies that you like and where you see the trading opportunities. Adrian, thank you for your time. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
And thank you, Corey.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.